So our breath and our heartbeat and all the other circadian rhythms of our body is really interconnected with each other. So if we are doing breath work and the breath is in the circular rhythm, then the heartbeat follows. And from the heartbeat, it harmonizes all of the other systems in the body. So HeartMath has done a lot of research on this, showing the enormous amounts of benefit of heart coherence. You go into the meta programs of your mind, so the subconscious conditioning of your mind that has been built on those belief systems. So it's really on a physical, on a mental, intellectual, and spiritual cleansing and clarifying, like a purification system, placing everything back into its correct order, like a defrag, taking out the junk, keeping that what you need. And everything is again back into clockwork.
Hello, this is Wing, and welcome to the 17th episode of A Work in Purpose, the podcast for you to hear inspiring stories of how people have found their purpose in life, and insights and tips on how you can find yours too. One of the most profound new experiences I had during the pandemic was breathwork. I was at a week-long spiritual retreat for the first time ever, and that was where I was introduced to holotropic breathwork, where the facilitator just guided us to breathe in deeply and out through our mouths continuously. Little was I expecting that after 20 minutes of doing that I would drop into a trance-like state and experience the most amazing and profound breakthroughs in my life. Some people in the group ended the breathwork session sobbing from pent-up issues during that session that they couldn't express when they're conscious. In my case, I experienced a deep sense of ecstasy and love, like I had within me an explosion of serotonin, and also got clarity about my purpose on a much deeper level. What was so amazing about it was that there was no drugs involved, no external substances whatsoever. It all just came from within, from just my breath. Since then, I realized that I really had no idea how powerful our breath can be. So I started to explore other styles of breathwork besides holotropic, like Wim Hof, alternative nostril pranayama, and then I came across one of my new favorites, Soma Breath, which combines music and beats to your breathing. So I signed up to do an online Soma Breath 21-day awakening journey to connect deeper with my life's purpose. And that was how I met our guest for this episode, Carla Aspesberg. Carla is a Soma Breath facilitator, yoga instructor, and she's also a nomad. In this episode, Carla takes us deep into understanding the power of breathwork, beyond just the physical level of the breath, and beyond the psychological level as well, into the spiritual level. She shares how we can better gain clarity and tap into our truth and our purpose, while unlearning certain conditionings and negative habits we've learned from just living in our modern everyday life. As someone who has been practicing and teaching breathwork for so many years, Carla has a really deep wealth of wisdom that she had accumulated from her fascinating journey to share in this episode that can help you awaken to your own purpose. I think what she has to say is so profound, and I hope you will listen with open heart and open mind. So, let's get started. Hello, Carla. Welcome to A Work in Purpose podcast. I'm so excited to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for this opportunity.
So I'm really excited to talk to you. So I did your Soma Breathwork Awakening workshop, and I came away with it feeling so inspired and so energized. So I wanted to ask you, where do you say you are at on your journey towards your purpose? Are you living it? Have you found it? Are you embodying it? What do you say?
I would say that, yes, I have definitely seen glimpses, and I'm trying to embody, or the embodiment process is happening day after day, because I feel even for the people that have found their purpose, it's still a decision to embody that and to allow that to emanate in every single day of their lives.
And what would you say your purpose is currently?
So, wow, currently, I would say my purpose is to share truth. So shared truth is in the matter of using different tools like breathwork, yoga, coaching, not to teach someone something, but if there's anything like an unteacher, then I would declare my role as that. So I offer truth through experiences to facilitate realization. So self-realization with a capital S is about realizing what we really are. And instead of identifying with different characters and different roles of who we think we are. So it is an idea that we are here to do something, right? So, and if we identify too much with that idea, then it results in the entanglement of efforts. So with that said, language here still becomes a way of communication and a way of understanding each other. So once we realize that truth, the way that the words resonate and vibrate inward into our inner space is understood much differently. So there's no more room for this misconception to filter through and create a distorted view, but we are just illuminated into the truth. So if I can describe it in a way, I use Advaita Vedanta, so non-duality, as my base ground. And I always ask people to verify things for themselves. So for me, it's really about unbecoming and unlearning all of the conditioning that we grew up with. And then from that unlearning, really purified version of ourselves, then we start to realize like the truth of what we are. So from my perspective, it's to teach people how to detach from their belief systems and to start verifying things for themselves as they really are, instead of agreeing to some concept. So yeah, I teach yoga in all forms, asana, raja, karma, bhakti, yana, pranayama, with the primary intention for self-realization.
Wow, sounds very fascinating. So truth. So you help people find out the truth about themselves, or what does that mean? Because like everyone has their own version of the truth. So when you say you help them find the truth, how do we know that is the truth?
Okay, so yes, if we speak in relative terms of truth, then there is always this level of perception and this level of verification of where am I looking from, which influences. So your point of reference has a lot to do with truth, right? So for me, the way that I understand about teaching people the truth is the truth can be verified. It doesn't matter from what standpoint or what viewpoint you look from. So it might look and express itself a little bit differently through your perception, but truth can always be verified by an individual itself. So instead of it, I separate the two from becoming a truth or being a belief. So a belief could be a truth for that specific person, but someone else might not be able to verify that. So, but let me use this example. So I love to use metaphors and stories. So the difference between those two is also a belief is mainly based on information, right? Where knowledge, on the other hand, is not based on information and what can come through the senses themselves. So let's take the sunrise and sunset as that example. So someone's belief could be that the sun rises and the sun sets, because that person can verify, come outside, I want to show you the sunrise in the morning. You can track it with your eyes throughout the day. And at the end of the day, you will see the sun setting over the horizon. So that's information given to us through the senses. But knowledge, on the other hand, goes much deeper. It doesn't have to go through the senses of this body. So knowledge, on the other hand, is we now know that Earth is a sphere and the sun doesn't really set or rise, but it is the circulation of Earth that makes it appear that the sun rises and the sun sets. So from my perspective, and again, there's always an influence of perspective in a standpoint, but everyone can verify, even though they have never left Earth and they have never seen it physically, but that knowledge can be verified, like, yes, that rings true. Like, that creates a really grounded sensation through my body, which I can sense that the sun really doesn't set or rise, but it is just the Earth turning around its own axis that is making it appear to be so. Does that answer your question?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So where did this purpose come from, to help people find out their truth, and to what end does that serve once people realize their truth? What's the ultimate purpose of that?
Okay, so first, I would like to tell another story of how I came to this. So the story I want to tell first is about the monkey catcher. I'm not sure if you've heard about this story. So the reason I use stories is our mind loves relating. And when the mind relates and it stops its own confusion to try to figure it out, but it notices that it's just a story and it doesn't have to look for meaning in that story, but just enjoy the experience. So my story can be described how I found this, or how I discovered this, based on the monkey catcher. So there is a vase firmly planted into the ground with a small little hole. So in that hole is just big enough for the monkey's hand to go in and out without anything in its hand. And on that inside is juicy and sweet mango. So when the monkey puts his hand in and it tries to take the mango, he is now stuck because its hand can only come out if he's not holding anything. So then the person who set up the trap comes and he beats the monkey. So this, in turn, what it represents for me is all the seeking going on, all the desires that I had in my life, always seeking for the next best thing, always seeking to feel good enough, to feel complete, to feel whole, but to a sense feeling trapped in not being free and feeling trapped in never having that which I'm seeking for. But in reality, if we go back to the story, is the vase really holding the monkey? Is the mango holding the monkey? Or is the catcher holding the monkey? So nothing is holding the monkey and encapturing that monkey. All the monkey needs to do is to let go. So the monkey is free even at the first moment that the person that trapped the monkey starts beating him. But the monkey is attached to that mango and it thinks that that mango is going to satisfy it. So therefore, it will keep holding on to the mango no matter what the cost, no matter what the beating and the suffering. So you can verify this for yourself too. And I always encourage that. There's always things that we want. There's always the mind that will provide with these sweet treats. But in order to be free, you have to disregard the misunderstanding to gain the true knowledge. So this goes towards my deep longing for truth, always putting me out on a seeking quest, just like that monkey. I exhausted all my energy in this quest, only to end up with disappointment because it led to me prioritizing expectation and secretly running this program of not being complete, always needing or wanting something else. And once I have that desire fulfilled, only then can I be happy and only then can I be complete. So more than trying to be a human doing, there's also another program that I was running for years and years, and that is to be a human becoming. And I think that a lot of us can relate to being a human becoming instead of a human being. So what I mean by this is, if I do this or achieve this, then I will be good enough and complete. But the thing is, we are not human becomings. And this is where language really hits it to the point, and so simplistic, that we are human beings. So becoming takes time and effort, and it's a process, while being is not. So these questions arising, instead of being trapped in these questions that's arising the whole time, taking a step back, where does the questioner arise from? So concentrating on the giver instead of the gift, concentrating on the concentrator. So becoming requires time, whereas being is already what we are. We just have to realize and almost remember that. So first, see what we really are, and then decide if becoming anything else is required. Because if we want to become better, improve ourselves, fix ourselves, change ourselves, that is all a service to the ego. So the subject and the object is a part of the integrated whole. We see that as separate parts because that's the way that the mind operates. And it includes both. So both originates from this whole. And this is not a process like becoming. So the mindset of becoming obscures the underlying of what we really are or already is. So even when seeing the false as false, that which sees is still true. So what one is without continuity. There's no progressing need at growing or becoming. So one can step almost like one can step out of this river of becoming and step onto the shore of simply being. So for me, it was really like I got a burnout when I was 23. I was exalting so much energy into seeking and into the story itself that I forgot to start to look from where looking looks. So just to become aware of the perceiver itself. And this is not an experience at all. This is simply about a realization, like, can the perceiver be perceived? We can all verify that again. If I ask you, can the perceiver be perceived? Can the finger touch itself? Can the eye see itself? So these were the kind of questions that really pushed me into a realization of, don't get stuck in the story. Don't get stuck with your hand inside of that vase. But teach people to let go and to detach. For me, detachment of desires is to let go of that hand, pull it out. And down the line, life will provide you with probably a mango tree if you go into the forest. Instead of you just wanting and desiring whatever is in that vase itself. So, yeah, I hope that answers your question.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's a great way to put it. Like, I understand clearly what you mean. So how did you know that the truth that you found, like, how did you feel that what you discovered was actually the truth and instead not another mango in the vase? Like, what was different about this that made you feel like, oh, I'm actually free now, as opposed to like having found something else that turned out to be disappointing in the end?
I mean, yeah, that's going to depend from person to person. I can say this is my truth. And this is the truth that I have found and that so many others have found and that verifies for themselves. It doesn't ask of me to believe it. But I can verify this for myself, which for me is, it's a beautiful freedom of, it doesn't matter if you believe in it or not. It simply is the way it is. There is no way that I can even start to prove this through my senses into the 3D plane. But there's something deeper. There's something deeper that can, the presence, I want to say, the eternal awareness presence just removes all of these questions that the mind comes up with. So for me, clarity is not the answers to all the questions that the mind come up with, but clarity of this is my truth is mainly the dissolvement of all the questions. So for me, I feel that is where I discovered that's my truth. And I will never push this onto someone. But yes, if you verify this for yourself, then it means that that's your truth too. We all share in all of these things because we're made from the same source, right? Just expressing itself differently. But yes, there is nothing to say that maybe it does go deeper. And I'm sure that in the multiplicity of the way that the universe works and that true creative essence can experience and express itself, I'm sure that the rabbit hole goes even deeper than this. But for now, this is the depth that I've got. And for me, this is where this place is so innocent that no question can stand there. Like no question has the groundedness to upset my silence, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what are some of the ways you help people find the truth? You mentioned that breathwork is one modality. Can you share more about how breathwork can help people find the truth?
Yes, definitely. So breathwork is my favorite modality and vehicle to use for self-realization. And there's a few different reasons why. So first of all, breath is the one thing that is always there. And it's the intimate relationship that we have with our breath that is most often forgotten. And that for me is the representation of our presence too. So if we look at how the mind works, it is the job of the mind to automatize things. So if something is there constantly, that creates this verification system of the mind saying, okay, there's nothing inconsistent about this. Meaning that if it's consistently proven over and over, then it moves from the conscious mind, sinks into the subconscious mind, and it becomes an automatic hardwired process in our brain. And breath and that eternal presence is two, I want to say almost the same thing, that the breath, the life force, is the feminine aspect. And that presence is the masculine aspect, perceiving the life force flowing. So they are so hand in hand together. And when we go into breath work, what happens for me and the way that I try to bring that across as a realization is to completely surrender into the experience. And what happens then is the experiencer, but also the experience of breathing, dissolves, and whatever is left is purely experiencing. So that in itself is the closest thing that I can verify of that's presence, that perceiving, that constant and persistent perceiving. And especially when we're doing breath holds, as the breath is the only natural rhythm and clock that we have, it's much more reliable than a watch. So if we put a hold on that, we are basically transcending time. And what happens when we transcend time is we send ourselves into the best opportunity to notice that that eternal witness and that eternal presence is beyond any time. It cannot be captured in time. So in the way that we do breath work and transcending time, we are basically setting ourselves free from the identification with the body and the mind. Because if you're in a breath hold, the presence listening to the body and the presence listening to the mind will feel sensations and will hear the mind asking, take a breath, take a breath. But these rhythms and cycles of the body kicks in way too early in order to preserve life. But as we override that urge, it's just another reminder, like, you are not this body, you are not this mind, but you are the one listening. You're the one silently watching to the body giving sensations. And that signal to breathe, it's the purest form that becoming aware that that signal to breathe is coming straight from source, straight from presence, and not from the mind. Because the mind is telling, probably after 30 seconds already, is giving you these thoughts of, please breathe, please breathe, even creating panic and anxiety to some extent to try to make you breathe. But it is still a decision from that eternal presence that gives the signal into the mind, and the mind gives the channel and the signal into the neurons and into the lungs to take that deep breath in. So for me, that's that and Kriya yoga is like the jet fuel that gets us to self-realization.
Cool. I want to take a step back, and for people who might not know what breathwork is, can you share what the gist of it is and what it does to people's body?
Yes, of course. Okay, so let's start, moving from the spiritual into the scientific part now. So scientifically, if we are doing breathwork, we are breathing in a rhythm, but breathing in a rhythm that is really like the ocean wave. It doesn't stop. So if we're breathing in a rhythm, what's happening is we're placing our heart into coherence. So our breath and our heartbeat and all the other circadian rhythms of our body is really interconnected with each other. So if we are doing breath work, and the breath is in the circular rhythm, then the heartbeat follows. And from the heartbeat, it harmonizes all of the other systems in the body. So HeartMath has done a lot of research on this, showing the enormous amounts of benefit of heart coherence. And when our heart is in coherence, we know that the heart has a magnetic field that is 10 times that of the mind. So as soon as the heart is in coherence, and that in turn places you in coherence with the magnetic field of your entire existence and your outside world, then yes, physically, some benefits like a decrease in blood pressure, an increase in red blood cells being produced. You go into the meta programs of your mind, so the subconscious conditioning of your mind that has been built on those belief systems. So it's really on a physical, on a mental, intellectual, and spiritual cleansing and clarifying, like a purification system, placing everything back into its correct order, like a defrag, taking out the junk, keeping that what you need, and everything is again back into clockwork. So everything is, it leads you back into your divine true nature instead of being attached to the habits that you have learned along the way due to the stresses of life. For example, if we are really anxious, we're probably just breathing into the top of our chest. We're not taking deep breaths in. Our stomach is probably really tense, and some people even reverse breathe. So this is all a reflection and finding the origin of that. So through the breath, you can find the origin. Oh, okay. Maybe this is not a physical origin, but maybe this originated in a pattern that I'm going through in my mind constantly of, I am not good enough, which means that the breath is going to end up not being good enough, not deep enough and full enough and rhythmical enough for everything to be in synchronization with each other. So that is, in a really short way, physically, there's a lot of benefits, and there's a lot of studies catching up, like spirit and science for me is now matching to each other. and they're meeting halfway and they're merging. But yes, in short, from my perspective, that's what breathwork does.
Nice. How did you first discover breathwork?
So my first interaction with breathwork was in my teacher training in Rishikesh, and we were just doing pranayamas. So pranayamas of alternative nostril breathing and some short breath. But I must say that was a really boring experience, to be honest. And maybe it was because we were all so tired waking up at 5 a.m. and going to bed after 9, being busy for such a long period of time. And our teacher was so sweet and so calming. So doing those breathwork exercises, a lot of people literally fell asleep in class. But from there, I was in Amsterdam and my first proper experience was with Soma, and it was absolutely amazing. So I was doing a meditation 2 years before that, and I was doing astral projecting. And I had this out-of-body experience. And when I came back into my body, I was listening to shamanic drumming, and my breath started synchronizing with the music. And I had this thought pop up and appear to me saying, oh, yes, you have to start breathing in beats and breathing with music. And that thought left. And 2 years later, when I saw and experienced Soma that had music and music incorporated with breathwork itself, I thought to myself, wow, this manifested. And yeah, had an absolutely amazing experience of just having this DMT blast through my body, basically really changed my world, and it changed the way that I teach yoga, that I teach my coachings. To me, that is now the foundation of everything that I do. First comes the breath, and then comes everyone.
Yeah, it's amazing like how breathwork can make you feel ecstatic or very emotional and tearful after, from just breathing a certain way. And it really taps into something that is so profound. And so I really encourage people to check out breathwork, because after I've done it once in December, I was like, oh, this is life-changing. And so I heard that breathwork is going to be like the new yoga. It's going to spread and become really popular. Can you talk more about that? Like, do you agree? And if so, why or why not?
So I think it is more important for people to realize that yoga is not just about the asanas. So yoga is essentially, it's breath work. It's the true knowledge. It's the asanas. It's a lifestyle. So, but yes, the popularity of breath work itself and the pranayamas is, I think it's gaining its way back into not just being popular, but the recognition of how powerful it is, for sure. So it's already an explosive industry, and I feel it's claiming back its righteous place, most definitely. But we have to also understand that yoga is also breathwork. So for a lot of people, yoga is just the postures that we do to be fit. But doing yoga in that way, I feel you're robbing yourself of the experience that you can get by creating it into an entire lifestyle of being fully compassionate to yourself. And not a lot of people realize this, but yoga was actually taught for a really long time, and some people still teach it this way, is for self-realization. It's the vehicle for self-realization. So that becomes the ultimate goal of why we do breathwork and yoga. And from my experience is that if you are doing breathwork and you are doing yoga for this blissful effect, then I want to say be cautious, because you are spreading the goal into one of the side effects. And if we cling on to side effects like bliss, it's amazing, yes. But that then becomes a distraction of realizing the ultimate truth. So again, you're robbing yourself from an experience of realizing that truth. And it's not about the practice at all. But the practice gives us this mirrored reflection of, wow, yes, this is what you really are. So that goes a little bit deeper, but yes, so happy that people are combining it with beautiful music and people are really starting to open up to the world of breath work instead of just automatically breathing. We are all becoming conscious breathers.
Yeah. Can you talk more about the different styles and which one you prefer? So there's Soma breathwork, Wim Hof, and many different styles. Can you maybe talk a bit about what are the benefits of each and which one people should check out for whatever outcomes or goals they might have? Or I should say goals.
So, Soma breathwork, I want to say Soma breathwork for me really links together my love for breathwork and my love for music. So creating some binaural beats and you breathe along with that rhythm while holding your breath in and holding your breath out at different stages. So this breathwork is really beneficial, and Soma stands for also the manifestation. So if you want to start manifesting and attracting an average perfect day in your life, then that would be something that you might resonate with. Wim Hof, on the other end, is really tapping into cold therapy and using breathwork to enhance your superhuman, I want to say. So if you are really comfortable getting outside of your comfort zone, really emerging into the cold, and from there feeling gratitude for the way that your body reacts and responds to things that's outside of your comfort zone, getting comfortable there. So Wim Hof, I would say, is a beautiful method of just exploring. For me, is watching yourself. So when I do Wim Hof, I have this phrase in my mind constantly, Carla watching Carla freak out because of the cold water. And that takes me just not out of the experience itself, but it actually fully immerses me into that cold experience of, wow, look at the body reacting in a certain way. And the breath prepared the body to be able to deal with this and build resilience because it wants to be of service. So for me, Wim Hof is a really, really powerful breath work. Sometimes if I want to do something more relaxed, however, I would say Wim Hof really goes about it. The phrase that gets stuck in my mind is just pull the air into your body. It doesn't matter what hole it comes into. So if you want something more relaxed, then I would say that might not be for you. Then we get holotropic breathwork, for example. Holotropic breathwork is like a rebirthing experience that is also really intense. I would not suggest that for your everyday practice, but each to their own. That's something if you really want to go through that experience and you might have a lot of things that you know you're resistant to letting go of, that you can start allowing the breath to release that on the exhalations, and that really builds up a lot of energy. So from there, I mean, there's so many modalities, and there are so many people bringing breathing into our awareness. More relaxing breathwork too is, yeah, there's even, I mean, I have my own breathwork too, which is more a feminine relaxing breathwork. But I would say try it all, to be honest. Like, you're not going to know what suits you best if you haven't given more than one type of breathwork a go. So, and don't see it as a failure if you do try a certain type of breathwork and that does not turn out to be the way that you expected or the way that you feel you resonate. Because we have to start ticking off of our list too. Like, this is not what resonates with me. This is not what my body likes. So I would say in a safe environment, try as many instructors, as many breathwork as you can, see what resonates and experience it all, because we are here to experience not just the good, but the bad, the ugly, the treacherous, and the joyful ecstaticness too. And the breath can really deliver you in either one of those, really building up emotional energy or clearing and cleansing out emotional energy. So yeah, go and experience it all. I have no preference. I am a Master Soma instructor. So yes, I would be biased if I say go try that first. But yes, if you do love music and in combination with breath work, then that could be a good one to start to try out. But don't limit yourself to only one. I would say try them.
And how often do you do breath work, and which one do you usually go to?
So I do breath work every single day, but I include it in my Kriya practice. So yeah, so Kriya, just to tell you guys a little bit more about that, that's a specific movement in your body, and you use breath work in your bandhas too, so energy locks in your body for a specific outcome. So yes, I include Kriyas in my every single day, and that includes breath work itself. And I also do my own Vayu breath work at least 3-4 times a week. And then once per week, I would refer to the Soma breath work.
What is Vayu breathwork?
So Vayu breath work is basically, Vayu means space, air, and there's a Vayu god. So it's the five vital airs in your body. And breathing into that five vital airs, literally just harmonizing all the air, the prana energy in your body. And with that harmonization, yeah, it's basically just an experience of Brahman, the only perceivable, as per se, as the Upanishad said, not my words, the only experienceable perception about Brahman. So yeah, it's also breathing with music, just in a much more relaxed way. We also do have breath holds just to push past the comfort zone to notice where the edge is. And from there, yeah, just enjoying being in the void, if I can put it that way.
Cool. I have to check that style of Vayu breathwork. Cool. So I want to take a step back and learn more about your personal journey. So what was it about your background or your upbringing that led you down this path where you wanted to seek out the truth? Was there anything particular that happened that made you want to be, seek out?
So I would say my health was one of the big things that led me down this path. And yeah, so I studied human life science and psychology after school because I always had a major interest in the way that the body works, but also the mind. So psychology for me, I thought that I wanted to become a psychologist because I was always offering my help and everyone always came to me with their problems. And trying to figure other people's things out, I was always trying to get to the bottom, to the truth of that. So whether it's in my archetype or whether this is just something that has to, like, call it destiny, call it, yeah, whatever you want. But I think that seed was planted with my birth and there was always the seeking. So I didn't become a psychologist. I became a medical representative. So I was trying to be of service, but I soon discovered that that way of being of service is actually just creating clients instead of just dealing with the cause of the problem. So it was taking away the symptoms of the problem itself. So after 4 years of being a medical representative and selling drugs to doctors, I was extremely unhappy. I got a burnout and I actually got problems with my own health because of that burnout too. I think it was all interconnected. So I found out that I was gluten intolerant, that I cannot really digest meat. So I was unhappy in my relationship. I was unhappy in my family, in literally all aspects of my life. So for me, that burnout was really, really a blessing because it turned me towards alternative ways of doing things. I was constantly going to doctors, getting blood drawn, and the doctors kind of told me, like, hey, there's nothing more we can do. These are all problems either in your head or there's something else that we cannot pick up. So From there, discovering alternative ways of dealing with my health just felt more true, like getting back to my roots, getting back to nature and dealing with things in that way. So I made major changes in my diet. I made major changes in my psychological aspects. I would say my healing crisis then started, because then I was delving so deeply into all the alternative things. I did crystal healing, Reiki masters, color therapy, dream therapy. Like, I did this entire holistic course over the next 2-3 years. And there was still this deep yearning and longing for truth besides and beyond all of those things. And it was only 2 years ago that I started discovering human design and Advaita Vedanta non-duality teachings that I really feel grounded. Like, my mind hates it because it cannot understand it. But I want to say, from a soul level, like, I'm satisfied. And that satisfaction and purifying the body, and starting with Kriya Yoga, which purifies the body, the mind, and the spirit, so that the truth can reveal itself. For me, coming back to my roots, that was, yeah, Advaita Vedanta. That's my journey in short, from how I started out trying to be of service to now just offering truth, basically.
So it sounds like you are deeply unhappy, and you found this, I guess, truth that, I guess, for you, you're like, you feel happy now. You don't have the same unhappiness that you had before in the past, right?
Yes. So what I have discovered is that anything that is temporarily and through experience is never going to give me eternal happiness. So whether it is a cup of coffee or whether it is a day off on the beach, don't get me wrong, like, I still love to experience those, but I don't depend my happiness on them, because I know that they are only momentarily. So yes, I can say that, yes, I still experience sadness. I still experience grief. I still experience depression, just like any human. But apart from that, I know that that's just temporarily, and it's an experience that's enriching my soul.
Great. So at what point did you, so when you're going through that journey and you were testing out all of these different modalities, at what point did you realize that, oh yes, this feels like this is my purpose? Looking back, was there like a moment or something that made you realize that?
I can say that it's more the feedback that I got from others. So it wasn't a realization from myself, but it was the reflection of the realization that I got from others. Like, wow, yes, you're really living your purpose. And that for me sparked the realization, like, wow, I never even thought about it. Like, it's almost like it just happened. I never planned for it. Or I never realized, like, oh yes, this is my true purpose. Like, others reflect that back to me.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And I want to ask you, so obviously you are a very spiritual person. And I want to ask you, like, was there a moment when you had like a spiritual awakening, or were you always spiritual? Can you share that story with us?
Yeah, I've had quite a few, some based on psychedelics and others on breath work, and some just spontaneously awakening. But no, I wasn't always spiritual. I grew up in a Christian household. So from that experience, I was taught to blindly believe. And ever since I think I was 19 years old, where I met a beautiful doorkeeper. I call her a doorkeeper. Like, she was opening up the door to spirituality for me. And I decided, like, okay, I'm going to step through. She gave me the first book that I read on spirituality was In Knowing the Chakras. And reading this book, my mind was constantly opposing, like, okay, but I'm comparing it to the Bible. And if I'm awakening the Kundalini, what does that mean? And am I going to hell? Like, I'm questioning all of these things based on the knowledge and the conditioning that I had growing up in the culture that was highly enriched with Christianity. So it took me quite some time, I think a few years actually, that I really indulged myself into what feels correct versus what I was told while growing up. And in 2015, when I was leaving to go on my teacher training, I still remember, like, I was going to see doctors because I was still a medical rep. I was going to doctors and the receptionists all told me, like, what? You're really going to study yoga? Like, you know that you're now bound down to the devil. Like, you're going the wrong way. And that to me was really grounding and nourishing to know that I will never oppose your perception, but I'm happy that I have my own new awakened truth. So from there, I had quite a few experiences, yes, where I had these glimpses of self-realization and awakening spontaneously. So from my perspective, you can never try to practice to reach an awakening. It isn't a spontaneous experience. But of course, like, I see yoga practice and breath work and all of these things like a torch in a dark room looking for that truth, looking for the sun. But in the morning, if the sun reveals itself and it rises, then there's no need for the torch anymore. But before that happens, then carry on. Don't give up. Look with that torch towards the truth, because that torch will give you a glimpse of that. But once that sun rises, like, don't look for the sun with a torch anymore. That seems foolish. So for me, yes, it's an ongoing experience. And every single time that these glimpses return, and this can return even, for example, in the most simplistic things like cooking food or walking on the street, it is so subtle that it feels so ordinary. I feel that some people that talks about awakening is talking about all these blissful experiences, but it's so mundane and so ordinary, yet you see so clearly from that point of perspective. And yes, the side effects is your body can light up because this is an embodied soul. So I'm looking forward to the process of just feeling these glimpses. And I know that I'm not supposed to have a goal, but the mind loves that, to be fully realized and sitting from that perspective for the rest of my life.
Thanks for sharing that. So since you got your spiritual awakenings, how has it been to kind of like function in our egoic society? Or did you have some sort of transitional period where there were more struggles as a result of the awakenings? Can you share more about that?
So I would say the struggles that I had was how to relate to other people in a new way. Because the connection is so immersely strong, like, you feel the connection much more. But in a different sense is the language starts becoming a barrier, and moving beyond the mind starts becoming a barrier. So for me, the challenge was, and sometimes still is, to start feeling like I can relate to others, because there are so many words being thrown around, and these words mean something different to a bunch of people, and that's perfectly okay. So if I use the word awakening and if someone else uses the word awakening, it probably means something quite different. So for me, it was coming to the realization that my awakening or my self-realization is not there to relate to others or to share it with others, but it is simply to be realized, and that's it. There's no need for me to try to explain what awakening means in a different way or what my self-realization means. It is just there to be realized, and that's it. So for me, that was the distinction that removed the obstacle in my life of trying to relate and trying to interact. Like, it still happens. If you really ask me now, like, who are you? I would want to tell you, like, okay, I can tell you who I'm not. I'm not this body. I'm not Carla. I'm not this mind. But in actual fact, there is some level of ego righteousness that tries to come in and prove that it knows better. It knows more. And that for me is not worthwhile. It's not necessary. So, but apart from that, I've felt more and more connected and more disconnected from the suffering. And what jumped to mind now was that the world is not the problem. Our perception about it is. So I've literally just felt more fully immersed, living and feeling this experience through this object called my body and my mind. So, but yes, I do get some clients coming to me saying, I don't know how to navigate this. Everything is so new. I don't know how to navigate my life. Like, how do I go back to my old job? How do I interact with my family, with my friends? Because everything feels so much different. Yet it still feels the same. So from that perspective, I would say it's just allow. Like, there's in surrendering, there is this deep rooted willingness to accept what is. And if we do experience things like this, it's to try to detach from the control that the mind loves to superimpose on happening. But it's to notice, like, those things are going to happen regardless. Like, listening is happening right now. You're not doing anything for that. There's absolutely no effort happening to listen. Breathing is happening. But there is this part in the mind, or a function in the mind, called the ahamkara, which is trying to claim everything. Because in that way, it feels of service, like identification process. And through that, it says, I am listening, I am breathing, I am doing this. So it becomes the doer. So if we detach from that and just realize that we are the perceiver of that which is happening, then the interaction and the life, and I want to say before and after awakening, is so similar because it's already happening.
Thanks for sharing that. So are there any, like, particular techniques that people can use when they're having those struggles? Like, oh, how do I balance? I mean, like, not get caught up in the egoic world and to kind of have that presence back without losing it, you know, over time. What do you recommend?
So the most practical example that I always give people is using that Carla, watching Carla doing this. So it takes you out of the doing and it takes you back into the being and into the perceiving. And that goes for absolutely everything. Carla watching Carla speak. Carla watching Carla listen. So there's always, even if you don't connect back to that role of perceiving, there's still the awareness there. So, and practicing that over and over again, that is going to, yeah, deliver you back into the opportunity to be here, into that eternal witness.
Yeah.
That and breath work.
Yes, I totally agree with that. Breath work works for that. Where did you grow up?
I was born and raised in South Africa.
Oh, okay. And you told me you've been nomad for the last several years. How did that come about? Why did you decide to become a nomad, and how did you actually take the step to become one?
So I would say that my first step was going overseas for my yoga teacher training. And at first it was, I never felt like I belonged in South Africa. So I had this really urge to start exploring. And as I started exploring different areas and different parts of the world, I noticed that that's almost like unlocking within myself new aspects coming to light and coming to surface. Like if you're in a different country and you don't speak language and you have to deal with their transport systems and just, you know, like you're faced with adversity, then there's different parts of yourself because you've never dealt with these things in your own country, in your own comfort. So putting yourself outside of your comfort zone, it's almost like you're giving yourself the opportunity to expand into further and deeper conscious awareness. So for me, that really became not only an outward exploration, but also inward. And every country that I went to, it was just this new experience of, wow, there's parts of myself that I'm exploring while outwardly exploring. So when I had the first taste of that, I knew that my feet had to kiss more parts of Mama Earth. So I started, yeah, traveling all around, and I'm surely not finished yet. I'm enjoying.
How long do you stay at a place?
Oh, that completely depends. Like I have no plan. Sometimes I have a set out intention of, okay, I want to see these places in this country. But normally life happens differently. And that's also the experience that I had. Like once I called off the search, I'm just starting to wait for the invitation instead of, if I'm at a place and I have an invitation, something coming into my field of, wow, I saw a picture or I read an article or someone told me about some place, now that's in my radar, then I will go there next. But no specific plans anymore. Like for instance, in 2020, I traveled to Thailand 4 days before lockdown happened in Europe. And my plan was to stay there for 6 weeks maximum. I ended up staying for 4 months. After those 4 months, I went to Las Vegas for a month. And from Las Vegas, I came to Mexico. Then from Mexico, I thought, oh, I'll stay a few months. And this is now for, I think since September, I've been traveling around in Mexico. So yeah, my plans always work out better than expected. So I'm kind of, yeah, just throwing out there, like whatever comes into my field, I'm waiting for the invitation.
Wow, that sounds amazing. On like a practical matter, like how do you like sustain yourself when you travel and live abroad? What can you share some advice for people who might be interested in living the nomadic lifestyle?
So I would say the first thing is really trust that we always have what we need. The mind comes in so many times with different aspects like, oh, yeah, you need this and this and this, but I've always had what I needed. So I'm teaching yoga online. I'm teaching breath work online. So my advice to others regarding making money or wanting to be a nomad, I would say instead, try to discover your own gifts, your own talents, make that and change that into your purpose. And then you can't go wrong with living your purpose because it's not only going to benefit you, it's going to benefit the entire society. So plain and simple, all humans are meant to realize truth or what they really are. So some call it enlightenment. But yes, we spoke about that word meaning something different to everyone. But your individuality doesn't actually set you apart, like separates you as it should suggest, but it actually connects you on a deeper level. So this fills the holes in the hierarchy. I'm talking about the hierarchy of Maslow, right? So we all have that hierarchy, the needs of satisfy your security, your physical needs, then your emotional, intellectual needs, your self-esteem, like go from the bottom, build a really strong foundation and work your way to the top, discovering your talents and your so that your success through your passion will become a stepping stone instead of an end destination. Because so many people are successful for the wrong reasons, or they have the wrong, I want to say, endorsements and the wrong vision for their success. And what do I mean by this? Comfort and luxury. People think that they have to become successful to have comfort and luxury, when actually success is only a stepping stone to higher realizations. So in this pyramid scheme, I want to say, be busy with your goals in sharing your talents and gifts. And if you are stuck in a false belief that you have no talents and gifts, or that you have to work a 9-to-5 job in order to put food on the table, that in itself is a lacking belief. So yeah, I want to say, like, whatever it is, whether it's becoming a nomad, if they want to support themselves financially, or whatever the case may be, there's this saying that says, like, turn your hobby and your passion into your work, because then you would not work one day in your life. That supports you, but also it connects society. And by connecting, like, the world needs your gifts. Just like a clock, if I can put it this way, like, if you get a watch, you don't get a watch with some extra parts. Like, if this part doesn't work anymore, then here's the extra part. Like, our society and the entire world is integrated and interconnected in such a way that there's no extra parts. But you are needed for your uniqueness and for your talents and your gifts. So if you're going to try to be like someone else, then you're probably, maybe you are one of the wheels of the clock, or maybe you're one of the letters in the clock trying to be something else. And if we're trying to be something else, we're not going to make that clock work. So I want to say, to the deepest level, whether it's becoming a nomad and how to sustain yourself, how to be successful, discover your talents, because you do have a talent, you do have a gift, and go after that, explore that, expand that, and emanate that radiantly from deep within.
Thank you for sharing that lovely advice. Now I would like to go to the lightning round, where I'm just going to ask you a bunch of short rapid fire questions. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right. What is one thing you like to do to relax?
Meditate.
What is the one thing you like to do for fun?
Dance.
What is one thing that makes you enthusiastic?
Oh, wow. Sunshine.
Oh, thanks. What is one habit you always do for a great day?
Kriya yoga.
Nice. What is one habit you are working on or would like to have?
Wow. Meal prep.
Oh, nice. What's the first thing that comes to mind when I ask you, what is the most important lesson you've ever learned?
That you are that which is perceiving the lesson.
And what is a book that changed your life?
Outwitting the Devil by Napoleon Hill.
Outwitting the Devil?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. I'll check it out. If you're not doing what you are doing today, what would you be doing instead?
Probably, wow, psychology.
Nice. And how would you describe your ideal life?
Exactly how it is now. Full acceptance of what is. Yeah, just being grateful for whatever shows up and being content.
Great. And how do you define purpose?
Your passionate expression of your true gift.
Nice. And lastly, do you have any requests you would like our listeners to do?
Mindfully breathe.
Great. And where can people find you?
So I have websites, and I'm on social media as Divine Interest.
Cool. I'll be sure to include them in the show notes. Thank you so much, Carla, for being a part of a Work in Purpose podcast. Oh, I love your stories. Thank you so much for sharing everything. You're so insightful. Thank you.
Thank you so much for the opportunity and for, yeah, just sharing this with people and also working in your purpose.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed this episode with Carla Appesberg and that you'll give breathwork a try. There's so many options you can find online nowadays. And I would love to hear about your experiences on Instagram or Facebook. Just look for A Work in Purpose. If you'd like to support this podcast, please subscribe, tell your friends about it, and rate it 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. And if you're new to this podcast, welcome. I encourage you to listen to our past episodes. Thank you so much for listening. May your present moment, now and forever, be filled with light, love, and joy. Until next time, this is Wing, and you are listening to A Work in Purpose.